Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Wednesday, March the 29th. And welcome to our commentary. Tonight, we have the great pleasure of saluting an old friend, Barry Jacobson from California. We've had, there is Barry right there. Barry is a military historian, friend of our show. You may remember some of those military history shows that we did, or a lot of fun. And Barry ran for office in California for the state government, and has a lot of plans as well to pursue other political careers, which I hope he does. So welcome, Barry. It's great to see you, and great to see you by video.
It's great to be seen. It's been a long time, Silvio. Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure. I always go to you when we talk about issues of national security or matters of gun control, as we're talking about now. As you know, we had this terrible tragedy in Nashville. I guess tragedy is the right word, shooting, whatever it is. The shooting has a connection to Dallas that is very interesting. One of the ladies who was killed, the substitute teacher, is actually from the Dallas area. She had moved out there, I guess, a short time ago. And the pastor's daughter, one of the little girls who was killed, daughter of the pastor, he has a connection to Dallas because he was the pastor at a church here in Dallas, and that little girl was born here in the Park City's Dallas area. So we've been getting a lot of coverage, a lot of people here, obviously sending their affection and support for that family, but it was horrible. I mean, when I saw what happened. So one thing I wanted to ask you is, when you hear these things happen, when you see these events of somebody just shooting like that, what comes to your mind? If I may just answer the question quickly, what comes to my mind is evil. Those are evil people who do stuff like that, Barry.
No, I think you're absolutely right. We have a fundamental problem in this country that is not going to be addressed by controlling guns. It's not going to be addressed by locking down our schools, though that is a short-term and intermediary solution. We have a deep moral and possibly religious rot in this country, moral decay, if you will, that is creating this deep nihilism among our youth. In the case of this particular shooting, it was a trans youth, and there's lots of things that go into that statement and that mix that bear talking about. But it's... The problem the United States runs very, very deep these days, and it's not a short-term solution. We need a long-term solution.
Right.
And I don't know that we can ever come together as a country, as divided as we are, and dig in there and find that deep solution we need.
Right. No, I think you're right. I think it all starts from a, you know, something is wrong with the inside, if you know what I mean. Something's wrong with the soul, and that's where it comes from. And unless we're willing to talk about that, I mean, I've been on TV here a couple of times talking about gun control, and they want to focus on the weapons. And I always say that, yeah, we can talk about the weapons, that's fine. But unless we're willing to talk about the culture that produces these young people, it's a waste of time to talk about weapons. And I always bring up the example, Barry, that, you know, you and I are of the same generation, and this stuff didn't happen when we were going to school. I never came home from school in the 70s or whenever I was going to school, and my mom was in front of a TV horrified that there had been a school shooting. I remember growing up, and I think I told you the story, I grew up with a bunch of guys in my high school and in my junior high whose fathers collected weapons. And I remember going to their homes and, you know, touching the guns, and their dad would explain to me this gun or that gun. A couple of times we went to the gun range. I remember in my school there was something called the gun club where kids could actually learn about guns. So it seems like the guns were all around us, but none of my friends decided to take one and bring it to school. So
right.
Something has happened. Something has gone off the rail here, Barry.
Well, I mean, in elaborating on that point, there was a time up until the mid-20th century when most Americans lived on farms. And it was not at all unusual that a farmer's son, probably more likely the daughter, but a farmer's son would come to the school with his hunting piece. It'd be stacked in the back of the school. And at the end of the class, he'd go home, and on the way, he'd hunt some varmints and shoot some varmints for mom's pot, mom's stew pot or cooking rotisserie. We didn't have gun shootings back then when the guns were in the class.
Right.
We certainly didn't have happen when we were young, mm-hmm. younger. And there's a reason. You know, we had an intact family. We had a country with intact families with deep moral codes that in most cases emanate from religion. From Judeo-Christian values for the most part. And those have been shuffled to the side in the Cultural Revolution that we're going through. And Chesterton, G.K. Chesterton, the Catholic theologian of the early 20th century, said that when man stops believing in God, he won't believe in nothing. He'll believe in anything.
Right.
And we're seeing that today in America. We're seeing that throughout the West, that worship of the so-called Gaia, of Earth Mother, an ancient pagan, essentially, religion, has resurfaced, as have many other neo-pagan religions. And worship of the self, narcissism, goes to the core of a lot of what's wrong with America today. The thought that everything revolves around you and your fulfillment. For instance, the military right now is in a state of dry rot. They can't meet their recruiting goals because the kind of kids that normally would volunteer for the Army and have for generations are kind of your red meat Americans living in the country for the most part. They're patriotic. They're not woke. They believe in America. They don't believe in gender-bending politics that has become the core of woke politics and has taken over the military. So they're not meeting the recruiting goals. And we're just seeing this dry rot.
That's right. I was going to say, just as a side note, Farmer's Daughter was the name of a show, wasn't it?
It was, with Ingrid Stevens.
That's right, Ingrid Stevens, who passed away recently, yeah.
I had a big crush on her when I was a kid.
Yeah, a lot of guys did. A lot of guys did. But Farmer's Daughter, yeah, I remember that show. But back to the serious stuff. You know, the problem is that when something like this happens, for example, we start talking about gun control, and then the most popular speech comes up, and that is, we have to do away with assault weapons. And that's what you're hearing over and over and over again. These weapons don't belong in the streets. And, of course, nobody really knows what an assault weapon is because this little pen that I always hold, I mean, I could actually hurt somebody pretty badly with this pen.
I bet you're deadly at 20 paces.
That's right, or a knife, or certainly a baseball bat, to say the
sure.
least. So it becomes a debate about assault weapons, and assault weapons is nothing but a popular term. So let me ask you, legally, is there actually an assault weapon? Is there a weapon, a military weapon that I could buy at a gun shop, for example, Barry?
Not per se. But what differentiates a military weapon, an M4 from a AR-15, aside from cosmetics, is largely going to be the selector switch, an automatic selector switch, which allows the weapon to be rotated from single shot every time you pull the trigger to a burst until you let go of the trigger. That's called full auto, when you pull the trigger and keep shooting until either runs out of ammunition or you let go of the trigger. Semi-automatic rifles are just the standard. To say that those are the problem would be, well, why don't we just go back to muskets? That is the standard rifle, semi-automatic. These are not weapons of war. The AR-15 was never used as a U.S. military weapon. It is, in fact, the civilian version of the M16, which was the prototype of the current M4. But the whole idea of the assault rifle, that the danger is that you can pull the trigger and lay down all these rounds, you know, that's more or less a myth. You still have to acquire a target. You have to pull the trigger, and by and large, I can fire a lever action or a bolt action rifle after I've acquired the targets just as accurately and nearly as fast as a semi-automatic weapon. But the main point I'd like to make, though, is that if you're worried about the death toll, by the number of people being killed by weapons, you're asking the wrong questions, you're looking at the wrong things. We should be asking what is motivating people to kill, not the kind of tool they use to kill, because most people aren't killed with assault rifles who are shot with any kind of weapon. Most gun homicides are committed with handguns, yet the talk always goes back to assault rifles. More people are killed with automobiles than are killed with any gun in America every year, but you don't hear them trying to ban automobiles. Or for that matter, since most of those driving accidents or a large number of them are related to alcohol, there's no calls for eliminating alcohol either. So it's a strange, hypocritical, nonsensical argument to say that the tiny percent of people who are killed with assault rifles, again, hammers kill more people every year than assault rifles.
Right. More people.
That tiny number merits throwing away our Second Amendment rights.
Right.
And punishing, by the way, the people who obey the law. Millions of gun owners out there don't commit gun violence ever in their lives.
Right.
It's a tiny percentage. If guns were the problem, then there'd be millions of gun deaths from these millions of gun owners frequently, I mean, every year or every couple of years. But there's not. There's a tiny, tiny percentage. So it's a nonsensical argument.
I remember reading something, Barry, that more people die in their swimming pools than from guns. In other words, people drown in their own swimming pools, something like 3,000 people every year. Nobody's talking about taking your pool away.
Yeah.
Or swimming pool away, even though those can be very deadly. But my understanding, and that's why I always enjoy chatting with you, is that an automatic weapon, what we grew up watching on these military shows, you know, the machine gun, let's say, the military machine gun. Remember that show Combat and some of those
sure.
other shows that we used to watch? That was outlawed, actually, in 1934. That is illegal to buy those guns. So when they talk about if this young woman, and I don't know this for a fact, but if this young woman had an AK-47, like I've heard, I think somebody said that, well, that's illegal. She's not supposed to have that in the first place. Where did she get it? Because you cannot go to a store and buy an AK-47.
You can buy the civilian version, which is single shot or semi-automatic. Almost every military weapon out there, from an Uzi to an AR-15, AK, whatever, has a civilian single-shot version. When I say single-shot, it means semi-automatic. In other words, you pull the trigger, a single bullet comes out. But so what? An AK doesn't kill you any deader than my 45-70 lever action. In fact, a lot less dead, because I guarantee you, if I shot you with my lever action hunting rifle, you would be you'd be damaged a lot more than you would from an AR-15. Biden brings up this stupid argument that these bullets explode on impact. They don't. That just shows his ignorance about ballistics.
So what weapons would have a bullet? I didn't mean to interrupt you, but because you brought up the point that President Biden made, and I'm glad you did. But what would be a weapon that would fire a bullet that would explode? I thought that was purely military.
It is not even military. It doesn't exist for the most part. No one makes exploding bullets. You can theoretically take a bullet and make it explode by putting, say, mercury inside it. It's hollowed out, put mercury in the bullet, seal it with some kind of paraffin or something, and it could possibly explode or an impact. But those aren't military weapons, military rounds, and they're generally not used by anybody. When he says exploding, and he's talking about 9mm, he's full of bullpucky. 9mm is not a particularly powerful round. It's, in fact, fairly anemic. The 45 is a bigger round. The 44 Magnum is way bigger. My 357 Magnum is bigger than a 9mm. So Biden says a lot of things that are just shows his ignorance of weapons. But as far as the closest thing he could have been speaking of was what's called a frangible bullet, possibly the one that killed Kennedy, if you believe some of the conspiracy theories, and I do. But the bullet that was originally made for the original military-grade M16 was a frangible bullet, meaning the bullet is meant when it hits to fragment. That's not really exploding. That's simply fragmenting. There is a difference, a big difference. So whatever Biden thought he was talking about, it might have been that. But in his inimical way, he messed the whole thing up. He is right. Possibly the worst communicator of any president we've had, at least in my lifetime.
Oh, I would agree with that. I mean, he cannot think even when they write it for him. I mean, all he's got to do is read it, and he messes that up. But, you know, when people talk about solutions, you know, they obviously they run to the assault weapons and they talk about people with mental problems. I agree that a person with mental issues should not buy a gun. But in order to make that happen, Barry, they have to have the information. So this young woman in Nashville had all kinds of mental problems, as I understand. Her mother was worried about her enough that they didn't want her to have guns, or at least they wanted her to get rid of the guns. But yet, I guess they didn't supervise her well enough, and she went out and committed the crime. So unless people are willing, to call the police about other people, how do you fix the problem? Because most people are walking into a gun shop with a sign on their head saying, I'm under mental health care. So what is the gun shopper supposed to do, Barry?
Well, there is a waiting period in California, 10 days. It's very irritating when you're trying to get a gun. But that said, it serves possibly or probably a good purpose. It allows the gun shop, the gun store, to do a background check. Now, that's assuming the background material is there to check. If somebody has no history of mental illness, and we don't have laws that ban mentally ill from buying guns, most states do, and you're not a felon, in other words, you have to show up in the database as a bad actor before you'll be flagged. So that's always going to be a bit of a problem. But talking about mental health, which is really the underlying issue of all this is mental health. A large percentage of the trans community is diagnosably mentally ill. And there seems to be a link between autism and the transgender community. My thought is, and my fear is that, especially in the schools, when you're talking about the gender transitioning minors, who are still in elementary school and going into middle school, as young as talking to them, counseling them as young as 8, 6, 7 years old and transitioning by 13, that they are, in essence, recruiting autistic children and telling them the reason you feel bad about yourself is that you're trapped in the wrong body. And having been the father of an autistic son, I can tell you that once you put an idea in a child's head that is autistic, he will run with that. He'll stay on it. He'll focus on it. And by the time they're 13, they will be convinced, without a great deal of effort, that they are a boy or a girl trapped in the wrong body. That sort of preying on children is despicable, and I think we need to put a stop to it. That's certainly one thing that we can do. But mental illness, regardless of whether autistic or not, is a big factor. It's a big factor in all crime. We're seeing a lot of homeless people who are certifiably mentally ill. They should be in long-term care, but we don't have facilities for them, so we let them wander the streets. And you're seeing the fruit of that in cities where people on subways are being attacked on the streets, women and men being pushed in front of subway cars in New York. These people are mentally ill, and we got to get them off the streets.
That's right. Now, we talk about solutions. I mean, look, we protect airports. I remember here in the Dallas area, at one time you could literally go to Love Field, park your car, and go to the gate. Didn't have to go through anything. And that's only 20 years ago, right? It was right before 9/11, I should say. We talk about schools. Now, I had kids in school, at high school, and safety was never a concern when I dropped them off. But I would begin by guarding the schools. I mean, I think, for example, if you saw that video the young woman in Nashville, she was able to get through the front door, but there was nobody there to confront her. Had there been a guard at that door, maybe she would have been killed right there. She would have not gone any further. But it seems to me, we had a case right here in Uvalde, Texas, the same thing. Once they get into the school,
right,
then it's a tragedy. It just depends how many people are going to get killed. Here is 6 versus 20 in Uvalde. Now, the police was great, as far as I'm concerned, in Nashville. They were not in Uvalde. But you have to do everything possible. That's my point, I guess. You have to do everything possible to prevent the killer from entering the school. If
yes.
you can confront him in the parking lot or at the door, you've won the battle. Because then he's going to die, but nobody else is going to die. And that's the challenge. How do we get the schools to do that? I have no problem paying a little extra taxes if that's what it takes. I don't think most parents would either. But that's the thing. You got to keep them outside of the school, just like we keep a terrorist outside of the airport, Barry.
No, you're so right. And the fact that that is never a solution on the left, that the most obvious thing, which is we defend the things we value. We defend our banks. We put armed guards in our banks. We put armed guards at our airports along with metal detectors. But we don't protect our children. Does that make any sense to anyone?
Not to me.
It seems to me the simplest solution is don't defund the police, expand the police. Put more police trained officers into the schools. For one thing, there's a lot of violence in schools these days. You just got to go on YouTube and you'll see every day a new post of children out of control. When I say children, I mean teenagers for the most part. Where even teachers are feeling unsafe in their own classroom.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be more police presence on the schools, unfortunately. Metal detectors, doors that are locked except for key entrances that are guarded with and have metal detectors. But again, that's all short-term solutions. They need to be put in place until we get a long-term solution, which may take a generation or more.
Right.
Which is restore the nuclear family.
That's right.
Restore America's faith in a higher power, I think, than themselves.
Mm-hmm.
When you eliminate God from the equation, all you're left is yourself as God.
That's right.
That's this wave of narcissism we have in America today, which leads ultimately to nihilism. Narcissism is a gateway drug to nihilism and the thought that nobody matters but you.
Well, I'll give you an example. We had a case here in the last couple of weeks in the Dallas area. I don't know how much publicity it got, but in two high schools where in both cases a minor, 17 years old, showed up at the school with a gun, killed somebody in the parking lot in one school. And then in another case, a couple of students from the automobile shot somebody else, didn't kill them. But in both cases, they were minors. I mean, there were people who were not supposed to have guns. They were people at least not to use them that way. They brought guns to the school. You're not supposed to bring guns to school. And in both cases, the question I had was, where are the fathers of these kids? Where are the parents? I mean, if your kid walks out of the house with a gun, that's on the parents. That's not on society. That's on the parents. I mean, you know, I always tell the story of my wife when our kids were little, they used to carry these backpacks, you know, to school. And my wife would check them. And one day, one of our sons, you know, said, hey, this is not democratic. You know, you're invading my privacy. And my wife said, this is not a democracy. I'm the dictator here. And it's kind of funny to say that, but it's correct. I mean, in the sense that she knew what they were taking to and from school. She would check their closets. I mean, she said, we knew what was going on, especially she, who was engaging with them all the time, because I was working like a lot of men do. But anyway, that's what's missing. If your kid's using a gun, he walks out of your house with a gun, where's the father? He needs to answer for this, Barry.
Well, that's the problem. The fathers are missing in a lot of homes. and the state has become father and mother in some cases. And the state does a terrible job of anything it does, including helping the parent. I think Ronald Reagan famously said that government makes a poor servant and a terrible master. One of the reasons we need to hold on to our guns, that we need to firm up and stand by and protect the Second Amendment, which protects us, allows us to protect ourselves, is that we are facing a political situation in this country where a large percentage of the other party, from mind, advocates not just gun control, but ever more authoritarian measures, a more authoritarian society. And the Second Amendment was not put in place by our founders to make sure that they make sure that hunters had the ability to hunt Bambi. The framers didn't care about that. What the framers wanted was the ability to stand up and defend our liberty the same way they had been able to stand up to the British Army and King George. The weapon that every farmer had, which means every American citizen essentially in those days, had in 1776 or 1775 when they faced down the British redcoats at Lexington and Concord, was exactly the same weapon that was the military weapon of the day, the Brown Vest musket. We were allowed under the Constitution to have the top military weapon in our homes. So the argument that you can't have a AR-15, which is a dumbed down military weapon, is would be to the founders nonsensical, because it's the very purpose of the Second Amendment is to be able to fight on somewhat even terrain, right, toe-to-toe if necessary, with the military that is coming to take your rights. Right? Right. It could be police, it could be military. God forbid we never have a day in America where citizens are having to fight toe-to-toe against our own police or our own military. But we better have that right just in case.
Right. Well, that was one of the reasons they put it in there. You know, it was to protect your own life, but also to protect yourself against a tyrannical government, because those guys who founded the country had a much better understanding of history than what we teach in our schools today. Well, we're just about out of time, Barry. I would like to thank you so much for joining us. It's a complicated topic, but I'm happy that you were able to explain it the way you did. I would like to have another chat with you sometime next week about our international situation that is gearing awfully scary. I think reminding some of us of our generation maybe of 1979, 1980, when the world seemed to be falling apart everywhere. And that's the way it appears to me. So I'd like to have a chat with you about that sometime in the future and get your expertise on that topic. But, you know, I think you're right. I think we have to, at least in the short run, take care of our schools. And every parent out there who drops off a kid at school like I did for many years should drive away with the understanding that the kid is safe. That, I think, is the beginning. And if that takes locking doors, like you're saying, if that takes putting a guard on the door, look, it's $100,000 a year, if that much, to have a guard at the door. You're talking about districts with billions of dollars in budgets. I don't think it would break any district to hire guards. I don't think it would. And I can tell you that as a former parent, and I mean not parent of kids, that is, and in a few years, the grandfather of some kids who are great children who are going to be going to school, I would have no trouble paying a little more just for that peace of mind of knowing that kid in there is going to be protected. Because as we said, once he gets into the school, it's over. He's going to kill people. But if you can stop him at the door, Barry, you've got a chance.
I couldn't agree more.
Yeah.
It's the most precious thing we have is our children. It just makes no sense that we don't defend our children as well as we defend our money in the bank or our airports. That's the first step, but that's not the last step. And that's a much longer discussion, unfortunately.
Right. No, I think you're right. I think the first step is we got to protect the schools. And then we have to have a conversation, like you said, about this culture that is producing these young people, these videos that you see on the internet of these young people acting crazy. I mean, something's come over these people. and it's not common sense. Thank you so much, Barry, for your participation tonight, and I'll send you the link so you can share it with your friends. And I thank you so much. It was absolutely great to have you.
A pleasure being with you, Silvio. Have a good evening.
Thank you so much. Our good friend, Barry Jacobson. We go back a few years, if you remember some of the podcasts that we did with Barry about the military history and so on. I still run them from time to time because they're so informative, but he's also an expert on this whole question of guns. He served in the U.S. Army, Special Forces, so he's very familiar with military weapons. But unless we're willing to take a look at the culture that is giving us these people, talking about guns is not going to fix the problem. Thank you for listening. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, and we'll talk to you later. Bye-bye, everybody.